Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Authentic Persuasion Show Live Edition. This week, I have my buddy, John Welch. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Jason. Always love being here.
I am excited, just like all of my conversations, especially because I've been on your show. You've been on my show. We've chatted many times. We've stayed in touch. You know, you do a lot of great stuff. For the few people who are watching this who don't know who you are by now, as the number of times we've interacted, give the short breakdown of what you do, where you're at. Also, the fact that you're like a nomad right now. What's going on in your life?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So I'm John Welch. I'm the co-founder of SkyMouse Studios. We're a small business marketing agency based out of Indianapolis and Chattanooga. And all that really means is that me and my business partner live in Indianapolis and Chattanooga. I love that. It's like, where are your headquarters? It's whatever. We're a national company. So what Jason's referring to is about a month ago, I had some weird rental house problems with a flea infestation. And currently my entire home is in a storage facility. And me and my wife are kind of like hopping around, finding like month to month places to rent while we figure out how to get back into a long term living situation. Dude, it's been so weird, man. But it's also been fascinating because, and also forgive the echo. I know this doesn't sound great. This room is like a grain silo. It's just a normal room, but I don't know why it sounds like this. It's been fascinating how little stuff you need. Like I've got like my computer set up, but like my wife and I came down to Chattanooga, the house was already furnished and, we brought like literally what we could fit in the back of my Nissan Murano, which doesn't actually hold that much stuff. No. And it's like, hey, you make it work.
And I think a couple of things that's interesting about that is when you go through enough stuff and, or you downsize or you have to move or live in like different situations, like you were living with
we were with my parents for about a month.
With your parents, right? As an adult with, you know, a family of your own, you start to realize, you know, you could realize like you need a lot less. I've been in those situations too. So, and you know, it's funny. And I sent you this chat when we were talking about all this. Always be careful not to say it couldn't get worse.
You never know.
2020 couldn't get worse, right?
I know.
Yeah, here we are.
It is an interesting way to cap this year for sure. Like, I know if people keep making jokes about it, but like, there's something going on. Like,
maybe the Aztecs, maybe they were right. I don't know.
They just were off by like, you know, 3 years or something like that.
Whatever. Maybe just a little bit off. So, and then before we get started here, my friend Brian Colligan, love the stash. You said that when he came on.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Just for anyone watching this, I have the mustache. I didn't follow the rules of Movember. I didn't know there were rules, but I just kind of like a weekend shaved the beard, left the mustache. It creeps me out whenever I see myself in Zoom or in the mirror, but you know, people like it. So here we are. Brian, thanks for that.
We got to bring it back, man. The stash gets a bad rap.
It does, for many reasons, but you know, everything like maybe 30-year trends, right? So the mustache from the, you know, 70s and 80s is now time.
Right.
So, all right. So what are we going to talk about today? You know, obviously I'm on a sales side. You're theoretically on a marketing content side, yet still in sales, right? And still selling, everything in life is sales. And so this is one of those conversations I love to have because it blends what, you know, sales and marketing and helping, you know, especially small businesses, you know, get what they need, which is new clients, but how can they do that? Let's start with the first topic that we kind of came up with and wanted to talk about, which was, you know, and I took this essentially from the tagline of your business, which is to create an audience that begs for your help. Talk about that for a minute and then we'll riff on that part.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny because we're making some pivots in what we do in terms of how, like what services we're offering to small businesses, but I still believe that the best way to scale and grow a business is to basically attract them to you, right? I mean, the sales model can only be scaled so far. And at some point, even companies like Salesforce, who invented that model to some degree, at some point they become driven more by attraction marketing than they do by direct outreach. It's just the way it goes. And the companies that don't just burn out because they run out of, you just cannot continually just churn. You can't do it. You can't just, it just doesn't scale. It does to some degree, but it's like at some point you're spending so much money trying to hold up a sales organization with continual investment that you never hit that mass. What's that? Like that tipping point where your profit grows as your company does, right? You just continue to scale your expenses with your profit. It just doesn't make sense, right? So anyway, that's why I still think that's the best way to do it long term. And I think small businesses can still benefit from that approach. They just have to have the right mindset of understanding that this is not a short-term investment, right? If you own a small business right now, you probably want to still own that small business in 10 years, right? So why would you not be putting in the work to make that something that attracts people to you versus something where you have to just spend the rest of your life continually reaching out, trying to hire and fire sales guys and all that stuff? So, I mean, I think that the basis of all of that, like I told you, is storytelling. But really what it comes down to is how willing are you to give away what you do for free? Right. If you want to attract an audience, you have to prove that you know what you're talking about. And free consultation calls don't do that. Right. We all hear that and go, oh, you mean sales pitch, right? Right. When someone says going out of business sale, you're like, wait, don't you do that once a year? Right. Like, right. We're all wise to it. We get it. And again, guys, I'm sorry if this is super echoey. I can't tell, but I think it's kind of echoey. You know, we're wise to the game. And so if you want to be genuine, you have to actually be genuine, which means you go, here's how you solve your problems. I'll tell you how to do it on your own. I know you're never going to do it on your own, but now you can trust me. That's what it's all about.
And totally agree. And I think it's very valid what you're talking about, which is, you know, trying to do the cold calling, the outreach, the outbound model to a certain point, and then you've got to switch over, right? Like large companies aren't doing that at scale. Maybe, you know, some account base, they've moved up, they're more strategic in that outreach, but generally an ABM strategy for a bigger company, let's take like a Salesforce, it's really like when they're going after big clients, it's a whole content strategy where you're still trying to get somebody to come to you, even if you're, you know, hitting them with some kind of marketing and outreach, it's still to draw them back in. And I think it's valid. And I mentioned this a lot with about salespeople. And I think businesses, it's also very important as well, is to focus on the fact that you want to act like a hunter and think like a farmer, right? So in a business or as a salesperson, it's to literally work on the deals you can today. You know, obviously you've got to do that, but then plant seeds. So at some point you don't have to live and die based on what happens in this
100%.
Moment. Yeah. And you know, and salespeople do that a lot too. They're just trying to close the deals today and they're not building relationships. They're not working their pipeline. They're not thinking long-term. Companies do that as well. And I think it's key to focus on that. And you know, I think the challenge is, like you're saying, is that a lot of companies just focus on the numbers game. They're burning out sales reps. They're burning out people. They're burning out, you know, their prospective buyer list because they're literally playing the numbers game. I mean, when you scroll through LinkedIn and you see all the cold call outbound experts telling you how to make a million cold calls, it's like, okay, that's not a good long-term strategy.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And I mean, it's not working anymore, right? No matter how you shake it. It's just so funny. I think I've shared this with you, but I got into sales in 2016, like direct sales. And I start reading everything I get my hands on, right? We all know the big guru names. And I start trying to do everything they're telling me to do. And like, I'm just going, this isn't working, right? But everyone on LinkedIn is saying, oh, it works if you do it right, or it works. And I'm like, I'm doing everything you're telling me to. Like, I still do believe that you can get on the phone and sell something, but I think that the scale is so ridiculous, and the amount of money you have to invest to make it possible basically makes it useless as a small business growth strategy, right? Everybody who's like, oh yeah, the phones work. Okay, well, you have $10,000 a year in tools you're using to make it work. You're buying high quality data, which is unbelievably expensive. You're using outreach.io. You're using LinkedIn Sales Navigator. You're using a bunch of tools, right? I've looked at all of them. I've demoed all of them. They're amazing. I've used some of them. They cost so much money. Yeah. I mean, you got to be 50 plus size company before you can carry that kind of expense and not have it hurt you, right? Like for long enough to make it actually worth it. And I mean, you got to have a sales rep. I mean, these days sales reps that are worth anything, they're not working for less than 80 grand base. So it's ridiculous. This concept that you just hire these sales guys and you throw 20 grand worth of sales tools at them and you're going to grow your company on that. A small business looks at that and he's like, what are you talking about? I can't even hire a sales guy. Like,
right. Yeah. And they're trying to run the business. They are the sales, you know, the sales department. Right. Yeah. And it's just out of scope. Right. And I think that's a valid point. I know we've talked about that before. I don't know for anything we've recorded. But that's something to keep in mind. I mean, these things, like, you know, you see the gong of the world and all of these tools, and it's like, that's fantastic. And then it's like, okay, yeah, this is how much it costs. It's like, you know, you've got to be of a certain size or of a certain funding or have raised some capital to be able.
Well, and that's the other problem too, right? That's the other thing too, is that we have, not to get too far afield here, but I mean, it's relevant because people are constantly telling everybody to do these things. We have a really weird business economy right now. Like, it's not natural or normal, and it doesn't reward people on what it should reward people on. It's not normal to have a whole bunch of people who don't know what they're doing having access to millions of dollars of money and being sold to by a bunch of people who are selling to them because they know they don't know what they're doing and they have access to millions of dollars of money. It's a fake thing. Like, we have a startup culture that has literally birthed a SaaS culture that are then feeding each other with fake money that neither of them actually has. The SaaS company is being funded by angel investors, selling to the other random company that's funded by angel investors. There's no profit being made because they're all upside down. Dude, it makes no sense.
No, it's just a house of cards. And that's why I had a conversation, I think it was in season 2, with Sean Shepard, who I got contacted with, and he runs, you know, GrowthX Academy for founders and startups, and also, you know, has many things he does for startup companies like funding and finance. And his big mantra is revenue and sales over fundraising, right? Like, you want to build a long-term sustainable business, you got to do that. So now we're totally going off on the side rails there.
But it's important to know, because you've got, like, the people that are telling you to do this, you got to understand, you got to know what their context is. If you have a guy saying, this is what working for me, and he's coming from he's got $1 million in seed funding, and he's literally just spending money because his investors are telling him to, you can't take that guy's advice if you're trying to bootstrap your own business from the ground up. So you got to understand, if you don't understand this bigger picture, you can't filter the information correctly. You need to find the guy who's doing what you're doing and figure out how he's making it work, not the guy who's got $1 million in funding, because that's not where you're at.
Yeah, totally agree. And Mike Monroe, welcome. I love your comment. I had it up here on the screen for anyone looking. People treat prospect relationships like a supermarket pick and pluck versus like a garden to nurture and grow. Which is so accurate. I mean, I think that's...
Is that a Robert Frost poem, Mike Monroe?
Sounds like it. It could be. I wouldn't be surprised if Mike would pull something like that out. Yeah, and I think that's a challenge, right? As people get into this numbers game mode, this volume, quantity over quality, and then you end up in that cycle, right? Which is where it gets really tough. So let's talk about, you mentioned this, telling stories. Now, obviously, everyone should tell stories. Stories work better. It's our existence as a tribal community, you know, knowledge and information is passed down by stories. But when you're talking about that in the realm of content marketing, websites, things like that, in your focus, what are you referring to? What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's one of those things where I've been trying to figure out if there's another way to say it. But I think it's kind of like, you got to reclaim the word because it's been so abused and ruined, right? But you know, I'm not going to take credit for this because I'm not a liar. Like Seth Godin is like my muse, basically. If you were interested in learning how to actually communicate in the marketplace, you need to read like all of his books. But I'm reading this book, All Marketers Tell Stories, and I've been obsessed with the storytelling. I mean, obviously, my tagline on LinkedIn is "Every story is worth hearing," right? Like, it's why my podcast is called Humans of LinkedIn. Like, my obsession is not. And I always act like everybody thinks this way. I think they do, but I may more so than others. I don't care nearly as much about what you do as who you are, right? Like, Jason as a person is far more interesting to me than Jason as a sales coach. In fact, honestly, like, I would like to have this conversation with you if you, like, you know, I don't know, were a chef or made pans for a living or worked in a manufacturer. I don't care, right? You're a cool dude. That's what I care about. And if we can help each other, great. But that has no relevance to me and to whether or not I'd like to spend time with you. And I think that that's how most people are. And a lot of folks, they think that storytelling means, like, people want to hear about my why, or they want to hear about, you know, the things that make me tick. And that's really not what it is from a marketing perspective. Like, we like to hear great stories. Like, and I know it sounds obvious, but it's hard to put it into words. I'm going to use an example from this book that really got me. Seth was talking about this guy who's like one of the number one real estate guys in New York. And here's what this guy does. Before somebody buys a house from him, he puts them in an old beat up pickup truck that he drives. And this guy's like one of the top real estate guys in the state, right? So he probably could afford a much nicer car, but he has an old pickup truck that he drives. He puts people in the truck and he drives them around the neighborhood that they're interested in. And he talks to them about the neighborhood. He points at houses that aren't even for sale. And he tells them the stories about the house. He says, you know, oh, that's owned by that guy, but that was built by whoever and whenever. And then he drives to the town and he tells them about the businesses that are there and the business owners that are there. And he tells them the story of the place that they want to live. And even if they don't buy then, they always buy from this guy after they have this experience with him, because we don't actually make good decisions as human people. We don't. There's no such thing as a good decision, right? We buy because we feel a connection with the person we're buying from, right? And all we're really trying to do when we're making a business or a buying decision is trying to find the person to connect with to buy something from, right? We're much less interested in how the product works or whether it even does the thing the best or whatever it is. What we're more interested in is that when we buy it, we feel good about having bought it, right? And so if you can buy it from a guy who made you feel like a part of the community, who made you feel like you understood where you were living, why would you then go buy it from a guy who's going to just go, here, this house has this much square footage and it has these views? Anybody can tell you that. And honestly, you can just see it when you walk through the house. This guy gives you an experience that is way far beyond anything that you'll ever get from a real estate investor, right? Or a real estate agent. And that really clicked with me because it was kind of a missing piece. I've been trying to understand this a little bit more because I think what we always come back to is like telling our story means that you need to know why Patrick and I started SkyMap Studios, or you need to understand what it is that makes me and Patrick tick. And I don't think that that's true at all. I think that your audience needs to know that people like them buy what you have. That's what they need to know. It's not about you and it's not about them either. It's actually about everybody, right? If I tell you a story about someone like you who bought the thing that I have, that means something because you want to know that people like you buy what I have. You don't want to know why I made it, and you don't even really need to know why it matters to you. You want to know that the people you identify with already bought it. That's why reviews work so well. And so I think that when you can begin to understand that, it changes your marketing because instead of looking at it from the perspective of, I need to communicate something to you, it changes it to, I'm trying to help you figure out if you have the same identity as the other people that work with us, right? And if you shift that perspective, it's no longer a sales conversation, it's storytelling. That's what happens when you shift that perspective. Now all you're trying to do is help them qualify themselves to say, okay, I'm like the other people that buy from this guy, or I'm not. And that's better for both of you to know that.
And for me, taking it one level deeper, but you mentioned it earlier, which is the biggest thing is people are afraid of making a bad decision. That bad decision and that fear could be in many different ways, but essentially as humans, there's a part of our brain, and I say this all the time, where we're just afraid of change. We're afraid of the unknown because the unknown could be damaging. It could kill us. Like way back in the day, eating the wrong berries could kill us. And so like, we don't like something different. We don't like change naturally. Now, some people have a higher tolerance, some people more risk averse. And they're, you know, either they are or they're not more risk averse. And so what happens is you've got that issue. And so people want to hear that other people worked with you or bought from you, and that they essentially at some level, they survived. It was the right choice. It didn't cause failure. It didn't cause embarrassment. They didn't feel bad about themselves. Like you said, they want to feel good about themselves as a result of the transaction. And the stories work. I know for me, and what I teach people is literally what you're saying, which is nobody cares about your business. Nobody cares about you. I mean, they care about you. They want to know who you are at some kind of rapport level, relationship level, and they want to know that you care and that they like you enough. But really all they care about is like what's in it for them and is this the right decision? And right. where sales, most sales organizations and salespeople have been taught and perpetuated in the wrong way is they start out these sales conversations with their monologue, with their like, here's how great we are. Here's how great I am. Here's all the awards. Here's all the logos. Here's all the this, this, and this. And here's what makes us amazing. And people are like, well, but what about me? Like, that's all that matters is what about me?
Right. Right. Exactly. 100%. looks like Brian's got a question.
All right. Brian says, super smart message. People like you find this valuable. And I'll tell you, you know, on that note, I have always included third-party stories, not testimonials like quotes, but just interactions where like, hey, I was helping someone like you last week or last month. And, you know, this is what happened and this is why they made the decision. And I've always found that to be very valuable and supportive. And the key is with that though, is you got to make it very customized. You can't say, hey, I helped somebody. It's I helped someone specific. Let's see, Brian, would it then make sense to make position title based landing pages?
Now this is funny. So this is where me and the corporate sales world and marketing world probably don't ever see eye to eye. Like there's, I have a huge problem with the concept of a target market. Like I think that the most amusing thing for me is how you have these corporations that try to take the most human things we have and figure out how to turn them into a repeatable process, which is like the opposite of that thing. They're like, wait, so we're dealing with every person we deal with is unique and every person needs to have this personal touch. So how can we figure out how to make that a repeatable process? It's like, are you hearing what you're saying? Right. What I think that's interesting about this, first of all, Brian, it's a great question. I appreciate the question. What I think is interesting about it is I don't identify myself by my position and title. Other people do. And that's the part that I think is wrong with this way of looking at sales and marketing is that it is actually not a part of my identity at all that I am co-founder of SkyMouse Studios. Doesn't mean anything to me. I don't consider that as a part of my identity. Now, some people might, but I think it's far fewer, right? I don't think a lot of people who are working moms or working dads think of themselves as a head of HR or a marketing manager, right? They think of themselves as a human person who does that thing. And so most business marketing, some consumer, but most business marketing is based entirely around what you do when you're at work. And that's the thing I care the least about in my entire life. And I think that's true for a lot of people. As much as they have to spend a lot of their time doing it, most of their time at work is actually there so that they can do the things they really want to do or the things they really care about. And so I think that approaching, it's not as much about a position or a title as much as it is about who you are as a person. So like, let me see if I can put this into like an example. Like I've started trying to create like a lot of my LinkedIn posts and even like some funny like graphic stuff that I do around showing that I understand the world these people live in. So last week I put up a post that was something I just shared a story that I heard on one of my sales calls where this woman told me that they paid $10,000 for a website and 9 months later they shifted directions in their business and the website was worthless, right? That's a story. And that's a story that is relevant to a ton of small businesses. I know because I am one and I've done that myself. And I also know that I've talked to a ton of businesses that have done this thing. So I made an ad and the ad was like a greasy, grimy sales guy saying, new website, that'll be half your yearly revenue, right? That's storytelling. I'm not trying to tell somebody you need to buy my website because it's super cheap and it's the perfect fit for you. I'm telling them a story that shows them I know what's going on in your world. I understand who you are. You're a small business owner. You're concerned about X, Y, and Z. You know, you're trying to make your money stretch, whatever it is, but that's not who they are, right? And like they're a person, which means they need to be communicated to as a person, not as a block on a spreadsheet, which is essentially what happens when you pick a target market. And I might be going a little far afield here, but I'm trying to explain what I mean by that because I think that position and title-based marketing can sort of be effective, but you're basically stepping into performance marketing at that point. You're just playing a numbers game. And that's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about using storytelling in marketing. It's a different kind of marketing.
So I would semi-debate this, which is fun, because usually we agree on lots of things. And I think it's also, you know, language specific too, because what you're talking about is content-based attraction marketing, you know, branding in a sense where you're like wanting to bring people in versus what you just added right at the last minute, which is the performance marketing aspect, right? The performance targeting, like if I put in this much money, I will get out this much money, right? 100%. Like if I send 10,000 pieces of direct mail out, I will get this many phone calls. Each phone calls cost me is worth this much or cost me this much. And then if I close this much, I have, you know, I got my CPL, I got my CPA, cost per acquisition. And so I think the thing though is that if we're looking at the position title based landing pages, which is what Brian's asking about, then it's a story within a story for that person. And the part that I semi debate is that I think for you, you don't identify yourself as your business title, as your business, as that, like you identify yourself as more than that. And I think that's great. And I think there are people like you. And I think that most of, I would say, the world and or people in America, especially professionals and business people, identify with what they do. Right. Like if you think about it, right, we all have this habit, especially I'm going to say men in particular, because it's about doing. But you meet somebody and you're like, oh, hey, John, it's nice to meet you. What do you do? Right. It's not who are you? Tell me about your life. It's like, what do you do? And then people say, oh, yeah, I'm a VP of sales. Right. Oh, OK. Now I know who you are and where you rank in the hierarchy of life.
Yeah, I see that completely differently. That's funny. Like, I don't even like I hate that question. Right. I hate getting asked it and I hate asking it. And I'm totally right. That's part of the other thing about this is like, I'm totally fine with me having a different perception than a lot of people around this. That's why I look at it the way I do. But I also think I just realized maybe I was hearing his question incorrectly, too. Maybe because I was thinking about that in terms of like the landing page being like directly targeted for someone who's like a sales versus like he's saying you make the landing page and the story of the landing page built around someone who is that person. Is that kind of,
I mean, that's what he's both. Right. I take it as both, which is, okay, position based, you know, position title. So VP of sales, here's the landing page. I'm going to drive people to that content. And then within that, I think the blend is to then have that story and address what a VP of sales or director of operations or, you know, whatever those situations might be. You know, it just depends on how complex you want to get to. But like you said, I mean, it's, are you doing performance based? Are you doing content based? How are you directing people there? You know, that's the hard part.
Yeah. And I think also it comes back to what it means to have an audience versus what it means to be trying to sell something. Right. And I think like there just basically are two different kinds of organizations. Right. I mean, Apple is not a performance based company. Right. Apple is like whether people know it or not, they're a storytelling company. I just use them because everybody can see that. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Right. And they're also one of the biggest companies in existence. Right. And what I think is fascinating is like the business to consumer world really understands these kinds of things. And the business to business world has like a problem with treating people that way. But when I'm buying something, I'm still just John, right? Like I'm still just like, I may be a part of a company and maybe that means I have more cash at my disposal than I would personally. But at the end of the day, John makes decisions like John makes decisions. And the fact that I work in a business or I'm a person on my couch on Amazon doesn't actually change that as much as people think that it does, right? I still want to be marketed to like John. And again, maybe I'm unique, right? But I think that's true for a lot of people. And so that's where it gets interesting in that whole concept of like, how are you thinking about your audience? Because audiences really follow people. They don't follow businesses, right? That's why when Steve Jobs died, Apple has, their marketing has plummeted in the last 10 years, right? It really has. It's weird. And then just the whole company direction, all of it, because there was a cult of Steve Jobs. There wasn't a cult of Apple. And I don't know. It's kind of like if you read Start With Why by Simon Sinek, right? I just think he puts it really well that if you understand that you're a specific, unique individual and that your brand is really just a reflection of you, that's what it is. Then it's really just about coming back to this whole show. It's really just about being authentically you. And then your audience will find you. Right. And that's kind of where I differ a little bit from the targeting concept. And I know that these are different things and it's not all apples to apples, but that's how I think about it.
And I want to reiterate what you said, which is even if you're selling B2B, you're still selling to an individual, right? A lot of people in sales that are selling B2B, let's say it's SaaS, whatever it might be, there, I've seen this so many times where it's essentially like, okay, well, I'm just calling marketing managers and all marketing managers need this and all marketing right. managers deal with this and they should all make decisions based on this. But then you've got, you know, marketing manager one versus number two, and the companies are completely different, culture's different, right. the individual's different, their stage in life, their career goals, their plans, you know, are they early in their career and they want to move up? Do have they been there? They have tenure, they don't care, you know, in that kind of establishment where
right.
they could make a decision or not make a decision, literally nothing's going to happen to them. And so, you know, treating everyone the same, it just doesn't work, right? It's just not effective to do that, to separate the human side of it. And obviously, and Brian, super active today on this. I'm loving it. You know, obviously much larger audience in B2C in which people self-select to a story. B2B is a much smaller audience. So content needs to be even tighter. And yeah, I think depending on who you're looking at, B2B, the nice thing with B2B a lot of times is you can be more strategic. So you can tell that story to that individual. And so, yes, it needs to be tighter, but it can also be more effective because you're not just hoping everybody, right. you know, whoever, right? Like, you know, look at a billboard. Okay, put up a billboard. Everyone's driving past it. You're hoping that the right person's going to see it at the right time and get the attention right. and then take action.
Right. And I think the thing then that's interesting is like, I really recommend that everybody read this book and definitely read it, Brian, because I think that everyone, B2B or B2C, self-selects to a story. The thing is, very few people are telling stories. That's why it's a race to the bottom, right? Like the reason why so many companies struggle to sell and why they have to work so hard to get the sale is because they're differentiating themselves on all the wrong lines, right? If I have three companies to choose from, I did a post on cigars. I mean, let me put it this way, right? I love smoke. I don't know if you saw it, Jason, but like I love smoking cigars. I'm a huge cigar enthusiast. And cigar companies basically universally market around some basically the same stuff. They're hand rolled, right? They're the purest tobacco. They're you know, they're made from whatever Cuban seeds in the best climate you can grow tobacco, right? That's their pitch. Well, right. I buy the cheapest cigar I can find that doesn't taste like poop and it's going to last 45 minutes to an hour. Why? Well, because there's no cigar company that is actually talking to me about the reasons why I smoke cigars. I smoke cigars because I have the best conversations around cigars with my brothers and my dad. I smoke cigars because they give me space to think some of my best ideas. And like, I'm a songwriter, so lyrics and stuff come to me whenever I'm sitting there thinking. And they also make other experiences great. So I like to smoke when I'm reading a book or watching a show or something like that on a summer evening. I get cigar magazines. I get all the stuff, right? Never do I ever come across a cigar ad that talks to me about any of the reasons why I smoke a cigar and why I know from experience talking to other cigar smokers, they all smoke cigars too, right? Yeah. And the point I'm making is that if there were 15 cigar brands and they were all offering a cigar for $7.50, but one of them told the story I wanted to hear, I would, first of all, buy his cigar and not anybody else's. But secondly, he could probably also charge me $9 and I'd still buy his because he's telling me the story. I know he gets me. He's making cigars for me. And so I think what's interesting about it is that so much of the sales conversations that people have are around how you differentiate yourself from your competition and how you go into sales presentations and you do all this stuff. But from a marketing perspective, if companies were spending more time on storytelling, it wouldn't even be a competition. Like, it's a wide open field because people do self-select to a story, which means that if you have the story, chances are good in a B2B setting, you're the only one that does because nobody's doing this, right? So if you're telling the story, unless it's just like the worst story and it completely turns somebody off, but if you're telling the story, you're going to get more of the business and it's going to get easier to get the business. So anyway, that's how I look at it.
And you look at the brands that can tell a good story, like you're talking about the cigar example. And I'm thinking about, you know, like, let's say alcohol brands, food brands, restaurant brands, the ones that tell a good story around it, like what the emotion and the experience. And I think that's really where it comes down to when we're talking about this the stories and Laura Hopkinson, had this comment. It's not showing up, thanks to StreamYard, but, she said, you know, we're still selling to humans, not companies in B2B. And like my friend Colin Mitchell says, I mean, it's all, you know, always be human, and it's human to human sales, no matter what. But the key is, with like what you're talking about, all of this is just the experience, right? What experience are people having? And if you provide a great experience buying and then a great experience with your product or service, people will pay for it and they will be excited for it and they'll be thankful for what you did.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about this, right? So you have shifted your business a little bit where you're focusing on websites and, instead of just content. Now, one of the things is what you found, and we can extrapolate on this, but you know, there's this whole doing content, doing SEO, not even getting into that realm, but doing these things that are long-term games, which is somebody invests $10,000 in a whole content strategy over the next 6, 9, 12 months, whatever that might be, and hopefully some stuff comes out of it, but you can't be for sure, and you don't know when it's going to happen, right? Putting a seed in the ground, you're not sure when it's going to happen. Hopefully it does. Hopefully nothing goes sideways and right. Then you can get something from it or even more. And then small business who just can't afford it, they need to eat today. So I know that you shifted a little bit with having, you know, be more based on helping companies build a website. Now, obviously everyone's familiar with websites, right? So we don't need to talk about that part. But what I'm curious about is your thoughts on like the minimum amount of website or if a website, how required is a website for companies to do stuff? I mean, I see a lot of people and companies think, oh, I can't get started. I can't make sales until I have a website and then I can do this. Until I have this, I can't do that versus just doing it, taking action.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that at this point, and this is kind of the perspective that we've got that has led to this new direction we're going. I think at this point, a website is like a shingle. You know, in the old days, if you were on, you know, the main street or whatever, if you didn't have something hanging outside your door saying, we're open, come in, nobody's going to stop at your door, right? I mean, you got to have a sign out, you got to put a sign up, whatever it is, right? Like you have to signal to the world that you're open for business. And I think that at this point, the existence of a URL attached to you is kind of that thing now, right? I mean, you can have if you drive through a neighborhood and somebody's working out of their house, they're not allowed to put a sign out in their front yard saying I'm open for business. And even then it's so what, like the, you know, 200 people in their neighborhood see that, right? Like we live in a new culture now where businesses don't really happen on Main Street anymore. They happen online. And so they're just, no matter what, like I've talked to enough small businesses, especially in the last month, I've been having a ton of calls with small businesses and, you know, they do it themselves. If they meet somebody, they go look up online. And whether we like to believe it or not, they're going, golly, this guy's website is, you know, garbage. Like if he can't even put a decent website in place, right? Like it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like my hair. People are probably looking at this being like, dude, this guy's a marketing guy. Look at his hair. Right? I mean, perception matters. And so I just think no matter how you shake it, some kind of online presence is required. I mean, even people on LinkedIn, right? They'll build their entire business on LinkedIn, but like, if you want to grow or sell, you got to get the conversation off LinkedIn at some point. So where is that conversation going, right? Like if your email address is businesscoach2020@gmail.com, right? Like it doesn't inspire confidence, right? You've got to look, or, you know, jasoncutterconsulting@gmail.com, right? It's like, yeah, Jason, I don't know.
not even that. Jason Cutter Consulting 82.
Right, exactly. Right?
Because the other ones were
right,
taken.
Exactly. Yeah. So, right, it's the perception thing. So I think the answer to your question is, I think that there is some kind of baseline web presence that is required. But the caveat to that is it's not nearly as extensive as people think that it needs to be. That's the caveat. And that's why this, you know, new direction that we're going, where we're basically just building homepages for small businesses, because if you have an existing website, okay, homepage is probably not that great, but 80% of what's going to happen on your website is going to happen on your homepage anyway. I mean, it's where people are going to reach out to you. It's where they're going to decide, because whether you like it or not, again, it's stats. People make up their minds about a website in about, or about a business from their website in about like 3 seconds, right? It's like, your first impression literally can change the course of your relationship with someone online. They're like, I showed up on the website immediately I was like, no, not talking to these guys. And they could be the best in their field. They could be crushing it. You could go buy from another company and have a horrible experience, but you're not even going to care because there's no way you were buying from a guy with that website, right? So that's kind of the idea behind what we're doing is we're building homepages for small businesses now. If it needs to just be a landing page for you, we can do that too. If you want to tack it onto an already existing website, we can do that. Or if you want to just basically make your whole website one homepage. There's a lot of reasons why that makes a ton of sense. The biggest one is most people don't read hardly any copy on websites anyway, like none. They read headings and that's basically it. And then secondly, it's actually you can tell a much better story when you force yourself to trim back the words. And so you can come across and actually tell someone why it means anything to them that you exist much better when you make yourself just ratchet down what you're saying. Because when you have all these words to say, you're like, well, I'll say that somewhere else. Or I'll like, you know, across my website, you can get the story. And it's like, yeah, but nobody's going across your website. They're looking at your homepage and then they're deciding and then they're either leaving or they're buying from you. So just make it a homepage, right? And most people are scared of that because they think, well, what about all of my about me stuff? And what about all of my services and my solutions and my synergistic, you know, it's just not necessary. You know, if you want people to convert, they need to understand really quickly what you do, why it matters to them, and then have a really easy way to get a hold of you. And you can build a website that does that on one page for most small businesses.
And I totally agree with the concept and the thought of the website matters. I think the important thing to focus on is, especially if it is semi-cold relationship or semi-cold traffic or the beginning of something before the interactions have happened, then yeah, it's that kind of thing. Like the LinkedIn profile, it's your profile picture, it's your website. Someone doesn't know who you are very much and they found you and they're trying to decide whether they're willing to go on, you know, the next step, right? Meet you for coffee, go on that first date based on your profile. It's like, okay, is this worth doing based on my instant gut reaction? Right. And you mentioned Tipping Point earlier. Malcolm Gladwell has another book called Blink, which is where as humans, we are just trained. I think it's that survival part again, to make millisecond instant gut reaction decisions, not even intellectual, just like gut, like where that comes from. And this blink of an eye decision and judgment about people that's then usually really hard to pivot away from once like your internal kind of instincts go one way to shift. Right. And that speaks to what you're talking about. Now, if you have a strong brand or a strong relationship or it's a good referral or, you know, there's some connection coming to it, I don't think the other stuff matters, right? I see a lot of people who I deem as successful in business, website, no website or website's garbage, not on LinkedIn, yep, not on social media. They have this relationship branding machine that works really well and they don't need it. If that's not you, then you need that amazing first impression. And like you're saying, which I think is important, because I know I am in that trap of thinking I got to have all these things and all this content. Like I'm thinking about, I'm like, okay, I need you to redo my site. I'm just thinking like, you know, most people fall into that trap. It's like, I got to have a ton of stuff on there.
Right.
And that's what's going to do it for me.
Yeah. And I think too, understand, like you're completely correct. Like there's plenty of businesses that exist without any of this stuff, but you have to understand that that's because their sales strategy and their marketing strategy had nothing to do with online to begin with, right? These are guys that might have done letter campaigns when they started. And first of all, they could also started 20 years ago, right? So you have no idea what the depth of their, right? Like I've got friends in Indianapolis that it wouldn't matter what any of my stuff looked like. If I asked them to, you know, for a referral, they would send me somebody because they trust me, right? But that guy they sent me to might jump online and go, this guy doesn't look like somebody I want to talk to, right? So even though he trusts this guy that sent him, he's still going to form a new impression about, he's going to form an impression about me that this stuff impacts. And this isn't, I'm not disagreeing with you. I agree with everything you're saying. But what I think is interesting is that in the, like, as we progress through this, especially on B2C companies, right? Like what this makes a ton of sense for. And that's something else is like qualification is huge. Like we're thinking about companies that are 1 to 10 people, right? You're a small business. $1,500 is a lot of money to you, right? Maybe you don't even have that, right? Maybe you have $750. Or $300, and you're trying to figure out how you can make something work with that. That's who we're talking to. And if you're talking about like, hey, I'm a electrician, or I'm a plumber, or I'm a CPA, or I'm one of these things, right? If you've got people that are looking for business, or they're looking for a new CPA, and they've been told there's three guys they got to check out. So they check out you and two other guys, and your online presence looks a little sketchy. They're just right. Like at that point, it's just another one of those commodity things. Like, you know, but if you've got a website that looks great and it tells a story, it puts you way above, right? So it's one of those, it can hurt you or it can massively help you. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring that little bit of sophistication at a small business price point so that these businesses can have a little bit of a leg up when that thing happens, when somebody's going, hey, why should I choose you? It's like, well, check out my website, right? Here's the story. And they're like, oh, wow, that actually sounds just like what I need, right? That kind of thing. That's what we're trying to do.
And then what advice would you give based on your experience where, let's say you're going for the single page homepage, right? The single page website, which I've seen even for tech, business to business, SaaS, you'll see that kind of page. It's very simple. It's like, here's what we do. Here's the story. Here's the call to action. Talk to us, right? Like, we don't want to do this all on the website. We want to interact with you. And then, you know, so that combined with what you're talking about, which is telling stories, creating content, which you've done in the past, right? And has been your main focus. And how does that fit in? Like, are you just saying leave the website, let's say if it's one page, and then tell your stories in social media and do all of your content somewhere else?
I think it's both, right? I mean, if you have a website, I think blogs are useful. But again, if you're trying to capture inbound traffic with it, you're going to need to be putting up 12 to 16 1,000 plus word posts a month. So I just hate to break it to you, but I mean, you're in for a lot of work if you're going to try to like generate, you know, inbound traffic off Google and you're a small business, right? So like, I think things like LinkedIn, Facebook, even Instagram, stuff like that make way more sense from a small business marketing perspective. You can grow an audience in, you know, 9 months, 12 months. You can start to make an impact with those kind of social channels. But I think the story should be everywhere. The story should always be everywhere. Like, you know, the way that we look at it is basically, you should come up with a couple of like main points that are relevant to the audience, like things that focus on why it matters. And then structure your content to kind of deliver those. Like on our homepage, we've got, you know, we've got three like story points. The first one is words that sell, right? So after a discovery call with our team, we write all the content and you spend more time crushing and hustling and meditating in the forest, right? And then the next one is it's designed to impress. We all hate that guy who shows up in shorts to a wedding. Our designs keep you looking like a pro and they load wicked fast. And then, you know, every dollar counts. Sometimes a great homepage is all you need. So no need to buy lottery tickets to fund a new website. So we picked a few things that we think really matter to small businesses. And this is also based off the conversations we're having. And that's the story that we're telling. But the other part of this, when it comes to like simplifying, is if you can't think of your services like a product, you're going to have a really, really hard time selling them in a simple way. And that's why most websites really suck, is because you keep thinking of yourself as a solution. And there's all these small businesses that are like, well, the thing that makes me a small business is my custom blah, 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 blah. And unfortunately, unless you're being referred and it's a real existing relationship, it's nearly impossible for someone to understand. And again, going back to Blink, right? Like you have to really understand how quickly people turn off. Like they have to be able to be like, whoa, I get this thing immediately. And unfortunately, when you're trying to frame it as a solution, their brain goes, nope, I can't figure out how this helps me survive or thrive. And so I'm not wasting the glucose on it anymore. And I'm on to the next thing. Right. And so if you can't figure out how to turn it into a product, and I think that three is the magic number, right? Some kind of three, either three offerings or three tiers or whatever it is, like that system is magic for the human decision-making apparatus. Yeah. Right. So if you can't turn it into a product, even if it's not one, like even I understand that it is a service or I get that. But if you can't frame it as a product, it's a package, it's a thing, and they can go, okay, here's what I'm getting, here's what it costs, here's how it works, boom, understood it, understand it in 10 seconds. If you can't do that, all the copy in the world, all the beautiful design in the world, it's not going to make any difference.
And what happens at that point, if you can't productize what your offering is, no matter what it is, even a service, like you said, then you're relying on the other person to figure out if it applies to them and how it could help them. And going back to what we talked about very early on with the stories is that people just want to know what's in it for them. Like, how does this help me? What am I going to get from this thing? Whatever it is, it could be sitting down and watching a TV show. Like, what am I going to get from this? You know, like your cigar story. What am I going to get from this cigar? And what does it mean to me? Don't tell me what you think about cigars. I don't care about your story about your cigars and why your cigars are the best. Like, what am I going to get? And how does this help me in my life? And when you do that from marketing, from a website standpoint, then that totally makes sense because it's like, okay, here's what I offer and then take it or leave it, right? Like, this is what I do. If it's a good fit, you need to call me. Like, this is a home run.
Right. Right, exactly. You got to think of it like a sales page. It's, you're trying to close, right? You're trying to get someone to click the reach out now button. That's what you're trying to do on that. So if you, like, if you just, most people, they look at it and they're like, oh yeah, I wrote all this great stuff. People are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you put that in front of a focus group, every single one of those people would be like, I have no idea what you do. I have no idea.
And that reminds me of when I used to go to Salesforce's conference, Dreamforce. And so I'm not a tech guy. And the Dreamforce, if you've never been there, it's this huge, you know, I think it's 150,000 people, at least when they were happening. 150,000 person, 4-day conference downtown San Francisco. And you go into the expo hall and there's, you know, 500-600 booths. And you walk up to a booth and everyone just says, here's what we do. And we do this and all these buzzwords, 360, end to end, blah, blah. Yep. And I'm not a tech guy. And I just be like, I literally don't know what any of that means.
You're like, here's how you talk to me, guys. More leads, faster, cheaper, better conversations.
And I literally would have, I would, you know, we'd break up in pairs, but I would have one of the tech guru geniuses in the office with me. And I would turn to him and say, okay, translate. What does it mean? Oh, this is a learning platform to help with training. Okay, cool. I need this or I don't need this, right? And so instead of, okay, tell me about your situation. What do you do? And then let me tell you,
right,
how this could help.
Right, exactly.
What we're talking about.
Yep. Yeah. It's got to be unbelievably simple. It's a weird combination because everybody thinks this stuff is complex, but it's really, really simple. Show up as you. Stop trying to brand yourself as something and just be you. Tell stories that are about the customer and the other customers you've had, right? Like you said, it's got to be what's in it for me. And then make it so simple to understand that someone who doesn't know anything about what you do is going to go, oh, that's what you do. I now figured, like, I understand now. And I also can now apply a value to the money you're asking for, right? If you can't do those things, if those things aren't happening in the marketing that you're doing, you might as well not be doing it. And the same thing for sales conversations. I mean, you can be getting the conversations. You could be the best cold caller on the planet and getting the discovery meetings. But if you don't understand this, you're never going to close anything. Like, this is it.
They won't matter. And this is perfect because I hadn't put this up earlier, but Laura Hopkinson put this in the feed, in the chat, and was talking about brands. And we were talking about companies who sell to humans in interacting. And then she put in USAA, which, if you're not familiar with, is a credit union focused on veterans.
That's who we use. I love them.
Yeah, veterans and their family. And they have, and two things. One is they have a very specific niche. They focus on these things. If you're not a veteran or a veteran family member, like, literally you can't play in their sandbox. It's not an option. And on the other side, because I've interacted with them many times as a service provider, they are amazing. They take care of their customers, their members so well. They appreciate them. They give them good deals. They give them good rates. They take care of them. They nurture them. They support them in every avenue. And that's when I watch their commercials, I know it's a USAA commercial because it's a story about a military veteran, family struggles, life, how they support it. And it's about them, right? It's not, hey, we've got great interest rates and hey, we'll charge you low fees. Like, that's not in their commercials or branding, right? It's like, we know you, we care about you, and here's how we can help.
Yep. No, it's 100%. I mean, I love them. We do everything with them. They have I do my banking with them. I have my house or my renter's insurance and my car insurance. Like, everything I can do with them, I do with them. And you're right. I mean, the branding is also on point. If you ever see any of their commercials are never, they're always about families, family time. It's about Townsend Wardlaw is a great sales coach on LinkedIn. I don't know if anybody follows him. He's more of just a personal coach at this point. But he has this thing he's always saying all the time, which is, no one cares about what you do. They care about what you do does for them. And if you just shove everything you do through that filter and just go, this is the does for them filter and just shove everything into it, what comes out on the other side is going to make way more sense to your customer. Even me saying I build great homepages doesn't mean anything to someone, okay? But me saying that for a very, very cheap price, I can make you look professional, help you convert more leads, right? Now I'm speaking your language, or at least I think I am. Maybe I'm not, right? But that story immediately resonates. If I say for $1,500, I can build you a fully functioning website, somebody goes, well, my story is that everybody I talk to says I got to start at $6,000, right? And I got to do all this work and I'm gonna have to write the copy and all this stuff. And I say for $1,500, we write all the copy. We do all, we tell the story. We're all these things, right? Oh, and by the way, we also include a manual so you can make changes on the back end yourself, right? And all this stuff. The guy goes, wow, okay. Now we're getting somewhere. Now I'm understanding, because this is about what it does for me, not about what you do.
Yep. And Ilya, welcome to the show. She mentioned, that's right, having an online place where people visit you increase the immediate trust in your small business or keep them hesitating about contacting you, right? And then it's differentiating. And I think one of the challenges here as we end this and wrap up is, most companies are more from a scarcity standpoint. So a lot of things that I see is that people, salespeople, organizations are worried about drawing a line in the sand and alienating potential people they think is going to be a potential customer. When you do it properly, which is you have the parameters of who you help, you know who it is. There are people who win with you and people who don't win with you. And there's people you serve and people you don't really serve. Like when you do that, the people that don't buy from you, it's a blessing to them and to you because it wouldn't have been good. So think about like a very fine dining restaurant, right? Like they've drawn the line in the sand. They say, we charge this. Here's our fee. Here's how you like even classic, you know, you have to wear a jacket and tie, even that mode. And someone's looking for, you know, the cheesecake experience or the Applebee's experience. They go in there. It's going to be a terrible experience. And all they're going to do is complain and probably just have the water and the side salad. And it's going to be terrible for everybody. 100%. The more you can draw your line in the sand of who you help and it's a home run for, lights out, hands down, raving fan mode, it's better when you come from that place.
Yeah, and I think real quick on that, because that's completely true. And I think that because everyone keeps talking about like niching down, it's destroying that for people because they keep thinking that like they have to find some, like they have to like create these parameters. The reality is, I know that most people watching this or most people who are out there, they only have a couple things they love doing anyway. And so that's how you figure this out. It's not actually that complicated. It's not about like you determining what's the market I'm going after. It's about you determining what fills you up, what gets you super excited, and what do you love doing? And then just say, I'm only going to do that stuff. And that creates it for you. It's not this complicated process. And if you can do that, it's like you said, like we all know it's true. You look at USAA, you look at Apple, you look at any of these companies that are crushing it. They all have huge lines in the sand. Like you said, USAA just says, if you're not a veteran or a veteran family member, and it can't even be that, like, it can't be that you had a grandpa. If your grandpa was in the military and he didn't have USAA and handed on to you, sorry, you can't come in. And so like, it's a big deal. Apple's the same way. They only have like 10% of the computer market. And people are like, oh, Apple's everywhere. No, they're not. Go into any business anywhere. Apple is hardly anywhere. Because very few people actually use Apple, but the ones that do are willing to pay ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
And they've made them one of the most, like one of the biggest companies in the world. So we all know it's true. We're just terrified to do it.
That's it. I love it. Appreciate it. So for your info, so people can check you out, skymousestudios.com. So you've done a little shift. Check out what you're doing now, your current projects. Also, obviously, because this is how we connected, this is where we're doing this right now, LinkedIn. Right. So you are on LinkedIn all the time telling stories, right? Yeah. And I appreciate you you joining me here for this live event in these crazy times and talking about sales, marketing, websites, branding, the whole journey that we went on.
Yeah, man. I love it, Jason. I love the show. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And for everyone listening or watching, I have a new program. If you haven't checked it out yet, you can go to Vox with Jason. So it's a new style of coaching and mentoring that I'm doing for individuals. Also, I have the consulting, but it's really fun. So check that out. I won't spoil it, but go to voxwithjason.com. And then obviously I have the book. If you haven't checked it out, if you haven't read it yet, go to AuthenticPersuasion.com. You can find the book there. And that's it for this live episode for this time. John, thanks again. And everyone else, I will catch you on the next Conversations About Authentic Persuasion.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.